Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Hey, what's going on there, pal?
We saw you at the hockey game on.
Do I know you guys?
I'm Ryan Whitney. I got a drink named after me.
Not a big deal.
Pink Whitney? That's what I thought. See you, fellas.
I invented the thing, you pigeon.
Pink Whitney for legendary moments.
Reveille, reveille, reveille. So we already recorded this week's episode or today's episode, but huge news broke. So we felt like we needed to come and tell you guys a little bit about it. Most of our thoughts we're going to reserve for next week so we can kind of get the full picture of what's going on before we really dive into it. But we wanted to give you a little bit of background. This guy that Brittany Griner was traded for. Let's go back a little bit. Right.
Brittany Griner has been freed. Mm-hmm. She is on her way to the United States right now.
Yeah, she was traded for a guy named Victor Boot is his name, and he's been described by the from the DEA, and the former Attorney General of the United States, Eric Holder, said that he's one of the most dangerous people in the world. Like, if you look at things that have happened in the last 20 years, and even a little bit before that, Victor was in charge of so many of these weapons that they got, whether it's Afghanistan, they got weapons into Uganda, into the Congo, all across the world. If there was bad shit happening with different types of terrorist groups, this guy supplied a lot of it. Even the gold that was in Afghanistan in 2003, when they got rid of a lot of the gold and it went out, this guy's airline was responsible for a lot of this stuff. So
they
this
call
dude,
him the Merchant of Death. He's an evil arms dealer.
Right. You get that very name, not guy. A good guy.
Yeah.
Not a good guy at all. But there's many aspects of this story because Brittany Griner was innocent. And when I first heard the news and saw really the social media reaction that people were like, how is this a fair trade? Well, it's not really a one for one. And I choose not to believe in like that, where it's like this person has to be equally as bad as that person or equally as good to trade. I think it was John Marshall, who was the first Supreme Court justice, first chief of the Supreme Court, who said that if we're going to have a death penalty, it's better to have one designed that if one person who is innocent gets killed, that nobody gets killed. And I feel like that applies a little bit to Brittany Griner. Like somebody that just had a little bit of hash that was prescribed to her from a doctor here, getting sentenced to 9 years in a hard labor camp. Sometimes you have to give up something good or bad for something good to come home.
I think the bulk of it was Russia was waiting for a prominent American to fuck up in some way. Mm-hmm. They had an opportunity with Brittany, and they knew exactly what they were going to do with her, which is try to get the Merchant of Death back, which is exactly what they did.
Right.
A lot of people are also talking about, too, American Paul Whelan, who is still detained there. They were saying, how the fuck did they not get him as well? Couldn't they get Brittany and Paul Whelan? Mm-hmm. For this fucking evil, huge get of a guy. And I totally understand that sentiment. Like, I asked those guys, I was like, why the fuck couldn't we also get him in this? Obviously, it's very complicated. He spoke to CNN saying he's disappointed that the Biden administration has not done more to secure his release. Because he has seen his bags were packed, his hopes were high when he heard that talks were ongoing about this, I guess, and he was ready to go too. He's also said they consider him in a different category than Griner. The Russians have always said so. They've considered me to be at a higher level than other criminals of my sort for whatever reason.
And that's so, because he's under for espionage.
For spying.
Like, they have him for espionage. So
he's
the
innocent,
drug offense, right. Like, it's right. The same type of thing, but it's a higher level of crime that he's accused for, and that's the reason. President Biden has said that they're going to continue to work to get Paul home. We hope that he does, but it's not just Paul that is there. If you're going to be concerned about this, there is tons of Americans that are held abroad, whether it be in Venezuela, there's some in Iran, there's some in Russia, there's people all across the world, and I think that the government is trying, but we do want to see more.
Yeah, I don't know behind the scenes, but it is really disappointing that, obviously, that Paul Whelan wasn't able to be released either. My heart breaks for his family and mm-hmm. friends, because their hopes were probably, when they saw the news about Brittany Griner, I'm sure it was heartbreaking to hear that he wasn't on the way home, too. Worth noting, he was saying too, it's even more heartbreaking. I think his hopes were even higher because it was in April that American Trevor Reed, the U.S. citizen and former Marine, he got arrested there a few years prior for basically he was drunk, caused a ruckus. They accused him of attacking police and they put him away. He got traded for Konstantin Yaroshenko, who tried to bring in $100 million worth of cocaine to the U.S. So they traded him. So his hopes were obviously really crushed today, understandably. But I think it's one of those things where you don't have to feel black and white about it. I think I can be very happy that Brittany Griner's coming home. And it also sucks that Paul Whelan's not coming home. And I hope they're doing everything in their power to do it.
And I think that one thing that this should finally put to rest is the old adage that came from movies that we don't negotiate with terrorists. We absolutely
we certainly do.
And we do it all the time.
Yeah.
We did it today.
My hope, my secret hope, is that he just has a heart attack on the toilet when he finally gets home to Russia. The Merchant of Death.
Yeah, that would be good.
A girl can dream.
Yeah, have bad vodka, get fucked up, and die. Here's the rest of the show.
It's a Friday edition here on Zero Blog 30, and today we have two, just two, rounds in the magazine. Round number one. The Navy's letting the dumbs in. They're just letting them in. Just any old way, no matter what you got in the old brain housing group, they want you to come on in. And it's a sad situation, and we're going to have to talk about this situation because many people are saying Sleepy Joe is responsible. We're going to get into that and so much more. And then around
number... always worked for the Army. I think they're doing okay.
True. Good point, Kate. Excellent point, Kate.
I don't think that's a standard.
Oh, got his ass. Got his ass.
No standards, Navy.
Yeah, round number two. We have an update from our friend Tom Schumann and his interpreter, Zach, and some of the things that are going on there. The government continues to fuck people that work for it. I mean, that's just a flat-out, across-the-board blanket statements. Usually blanket statements aren't great. Right now, if you work for the government, most likely you're getting fucked. I mean, that's just the way it is. It's the way it's been for a while, but especially the interpreters, the people that are from different countries that work for us. I don't know how and why we would continue to get people with the way that we've treated folks like Zach. I just don't. I don't at all.
Hockey is on. And no matter the city, no matter the team, no matter the game. Whether it's face-off or penalty shots, regular season or playoffs, win or lose, no matter what happens, no matter where it happens, New Amsterdam Vodka is there.
All right, let's get going with the show because this story came across and everybody automatically starts making fun of the Navy. But
rightfully so.
We're all going through a difficult recruiting time where even Khan's beloved army has to have like fat camp before boot camp. Like all kinds of stuff is happening where it makes it really difficult to recruit. But I wanted to give some of the information about why we're having difficulties recruiting first. So, Kate, can you please walk us through that?
Sure. So this comes to us from Reuters. I'll never learn how to say it, and that will be
it won't ever matter. It won't ever matter, yeah.
So cracks are beginning to appear in the armed services all-volunteer system, which could have military significance and political impact. Army recruiters are finding that fewer top-quality young men and women, they left that part out, are beating on their doors. During the first quarter of the fiscal year, that figure dropped 22% over the previous year. So that's a massive drop in people who just came seeking, saying, I want to join without them having to go find people. Vice Admiral William Lawrence, Chief of Naval Personnel, says the recruiting and retention environment appears to be changing in ways which will make it increasingly difficult to meet our requirements. Other higher-ups are saying there's a possible hemorrhage of talent coming up. Private studies for the Army say a return to the draft might be necessary. So this sounds like they're in crisis mode. Like sounds
yeah, like it really does. Like it's, but that also sounds like it's not from now because that article was written in 1984 when Reagan was still president.
You got
that's the
goose.
Reason why we have that. So at the end of in the 1980s, we moved away from the Cuban Missile Crisis. We moved away from all the other crises that are going on in the world. There was no active wars going on. There was no active real threats going on. And recruiting took a dip in 1984. And that's when super conservative Ronald Reagan was halfway through his term of 8 years. I say all that to say this is not new. The military constantly goes through this whenever you have an ending of a period of war. Even recruiting in the 1950s was incredibly difficult at the end of World War II. People had to, they had to have all kinds of incentives and shit like that in the 1950s. So that's why I say that. But we are still having recruiting issues, yeah. And the Navy is trying to tackle it this way. What do we got here, Kate?
Okay, so under new guidelines...
That was a good podcast.
That was good. Right? You got my goose. Right? My goose got caught. So
that was good. And that's the reason, that shows how far we come. There would never, ever be an article now that says young men to serve. It would always say young men and women now. It would not say young men.
Mm-hmm.
From Reuters, anyway.
Got my goose. I said Reuters. Newsmax. Come on.
Right. Kate was about to, fuck!
Yeah. I know the AP would pull that shit, but not Reuters. Yeah. My God. So under new guidelines announced on Monday, the Navy will now accept up to 7,500 new sailors who score between the 10th and 30th percentile on the AFQT, the Armed Forces Qualification Test. These future sailors would be so-called Category IV recruits. What's that? Category 5?
Category 4.
I don't know.
Oh, Roman numerals. So Katie, Roman numerals there.
The moment I saw that... You got to tell these dumbs, don't do it. Because whenever they're going up to the recruiting station, they get to boot camp. If you have on any of your documents that you're a Category 4, it's like saying the same thing for being dumb and getting an ASVAB waiver. Like being Category 4 and having their own little terminology of what they're going to do is a recipe for extreme hazing and just getting made fun of for your entire time that you're in.
It's almost like an official form of bullying. You're slapping that title on them. It's like, hey, everybody, come on. Here are the dumb guys. Let's make fun of them.
I would also argue, though, that like our education system fails so many people and just pushes so many people through. A lot of these Category 4 people are probably very smart and just got fucked in wherever their school district was.
That's a lot of fucking, though, Kate.
I don't know about that.
I went through, I did a couple ASVABs, like practice ASVABs, to see how easy these are and tried to get a low score. Yeah, like, I was trying to get a 10. And I was like, I don't know which one of these questions, because I said, if I even have to think about it for a second, I'm going to get it wrong on purpose.
But, I'm thinking, I couldn't tell you, like, what... The people I served with, I had a pretty tight-knit group of friends. I feel like we had a wide range of scores among us. And, like, I don't think it really made a difference. In the military, like, you're doing what you're told for the most part. And, like, yeah, there's times where you have to make decisions. But, like, I don't hate this because part of me feels like it doesn't matter that fucking much. Like,
but I would say that your experience, Kate, might be a little jaded based on the MOS that you are. Because there's certain MOS that has higher GT requirements. Yeah. You have to have higher level of understanding and shit like that. MP being one of those because you have law enforcement capabilities. Yeah. So they want have people that are that way. But if you go into other MOSs, there's obviously some dumbs.
Let me tell you about the old artillery world.
There we go.
Yeah, Cons. I'm sure that this is... Yeah. They just pick the biggest, strongest, dumbest people, like, load these things up.
Can you pick things up and put them down?
Yeah,
Red leg. Let's go.
Right. What kind of people were you dealing with? Like, to give... I know that's an old trite thing of... artillery folks or 0331s like machine gunners that they're dumb or motor T. But did you ever have as like the leader of an artillery group or whatever the fuck you guys call it? Brigade? What do you call it? Artillery?
There's a battery. Artillery battery. Yeah.
What's your own artillery?
Just a platoon. We have your platoons as well. Yep.
Did you ever have any difficulties with your platoon where you're like, one of these soldiers is a little dumb?
Oh, absolutely. I've told this story before. The gentleman who decided to marry the young woman who worked at the gentleman's club, who he had met 2 weeks prior to deployment, marrying her. He was also an individual who he had to do periodic check-ins with our platoon sergeant. He was the only one. Basically to make sure like he didn't wander off and go somewhere he wasn't supposed to be, and to just check in and basically make sure he did every task that he was assigned to do. Because it was like progress reports throughout the day. It couldn't just be like, hey, here's three things you need to get done today. I'll see you at 1700 and let me know they're all complete. It was of every few hours he had to like give a progress report on how he was doing with those. So
Which I mean, is what I have to. That's what I have to do with my kid because they have ADHD. Like if I send them to their room to go clean and like put up laundry, there's not shit that's getting done. We're gonna have a different Lego set that's put together. Like there's gonna be all kinds of stuff, but it's not gonna be that task. And that's what's worrying about having, because one of the main aspects that you want, not just leaders to do, but even subordinates, you want them to be able to predict commander's intent and to act without constant supervision. Like that's super important. And I don't know. If you're setting these people up who don't have the highest aptitude, if you're even setting them up for success in the military.
Are you looking for relief, relaxation, or to party on the motherfucking moon? Then check out 3Chi's new True Strains lineup of cannabis vapes and gummies tailored for specific effects. And the best part? It's delivered straight to your door. Visit 3Chi.com. That's 3CHI.com. And for a limited time, get 20% off with the code Barstool20.
That's a fair question because I don't know when it comes to aptitude and intelligence, I don't know how much of that you can learn. Like what you just used as an example where you're interpreting intent, maybe that comes with age, maybe that comes with maturity if you're in the military long enough, but I don't know how much of that you can actually develop. I feel like that might either be something you possess or you don't. And if you're someone who doesn't possess that, you're almost doomed to failure and as a result, potentially putting the rest of your unit in harm's way. So it is scary a little bit and worrisome for who's ever in the leadership position.
I agree. Okay, let's keep going through the article.
Okay. So the new new policy comes as they're struggling to find qualified recruits. The Army is struggling to find enlistees, missing its 2022 goal by 15,000 new soldiers, and has instituted a basic training for basic training. It's basically like a nesting doll of basic training. You keep popping open different little trainings till you get to the end.
Right.
The Future Soldier Prep Course to help recruits meet the minimum physical and aptitude requirements.
I poo-pooed on it before. I actually think that's fucking great.
Yes,
like the things
I think
that
so
you're
too.
Doing. Like if you guys do that at West Point, right? Like you have the preparatory school, like
yeah,
for
we have
football
the prep
players
school,
like, that want to come in. Explain what that is, because it's I think it's kind of the same thing.
So the prep school is almost primarily for academic purposes. If you are, and a lot of times it's if you're a recruited athlete and you don't necessarily have the grades, you'll go to the prep school for a year to get indoctrinated into that military lifestyle, learn a little bit more with, time management, get your grades up in certain areas, and then you'll matriculate to West Point. But it's very common, and it happens every year.
Yeah, and I think that's fine because you do have phases of school. Mm-hmm. Like even now, like you go to Marine Corps boot camp, then you go to combat training, and then you go to your MOS school. So this is just essentially a prerequisite to get to boot camp, which I don't have any problem with. And if you're bringing in other people into your pool and making their lives better and showing that they can do better things, I think that is one of the best things that the military does. It shows you, hey, you could do this job, you could be successful at it, and we're going to train you if you don't know how to do it. I think that's one of the biggest benefits that there is.
I think so, too. And also, they're, the Navy met its 2022 recruiting quotas by just 42 sailors. And in November, they announced they're raising the maximum age enlistment to 41. And I think now, with the inflation and the economy and all that stuff, like, people are going to do it up to a very late age. Like, I think you will see 41-year-olds enlisting. If you have a family and you can't provide for them right now, and because a lot of older people in their mid-30s and 40s are struggling to make ends meet, and that suddenly becomes an option, like a guaranteed paycheck, guaranteed coverage for your family, I think they're going to see a lot of people who are, which you might say, oh, it's taking advantage of people, it's whatever. It's giving
it's
them
providing
a
way out
paycheck,
and a lot,
man. Like,
right.
So I do think... And it's like not like we're in wartime right now. I don't know. I just feel like I don't think it's that crazy to do that.
But also, too, you're also then providing them with skills that then they might, after their enlistment, be able to turn around and go get a job that they weren't able to prior to having those skills.
Go ahead, Kate.
I had an age waiver in boot camp who I became pretty close with. We went through boot camp and MCT together, and she was 32, I think. She had an age waiver, and she kept up with us just fine. Like, there was no... Whatever.
41 is going to be tough.
41.
I'm 40
that's
years old.
Pushing it.
I'm 40.
Not everyone's Tom Brady.
God, if you told me, hey, chaps, you got to go put your feet on the yellow footprints, I'm like, just chop them things off, man. I don't even fucking need them. And Kate, you're absolutely right. If you have a small family, or even just you're looking at some of the high cost of rent, like where you guys live.
Yeah.
Like if you're talking for an average apartment, $2,000-$4,000 a month to live in some of these areas, and the Army or whatever comes in and they're like, hey, you can live on base. Your housing is going to be taken care of.
Yep.
You're no longer going to have to pay $700 to $900 a month for your kids to have medical insurance. You have all these different things covered. And once you get out, you're not going to have to put a down payment of 20%, which is a barrier for most people to get a new house. Mm-hmm. You're not going to have to do any of that. All of the social programs that the military has is what should be on these billboards. You want to buy a house at 25 years old? Join the fucking military. You want to have insurance that doesn't cripple your bank account whenever you have children? Join the military. All those different things would be great. But now it's like, do you want to play fucking video games? Like, and anybody can do that shit, right? Like, any job.
I think you are extremely right on that. And I think they will see a lot of older people joining for this reason. Like, I think the way things are right now, it's actually a pretty smart move to raise that age.
Especially when there's not active wide-scale combat. There is certainly combat. There's one of our groups that is currently in northern Syria right now that was actually pretty close to getting shelled last week. So this adage that we're not at combat at all, flat out not true. There's plenty of troops in contact still, and I think that we should definitely remember but it's not a wide-scale conflict.
People also forget mom's strength and dad's strength. In your mid-30s and 40s, you can flip a car. I mean, you get
get a mom out there and be like, hey, your baby's under this artillery shell and can't get out unless you throw it in there.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Maybe I'll join up again. But I don't know.
The other thing I think is important, and it made me think of, because the gentleman I use as my example, he had such a white heart. He was gung-ho and was willing to work hard and wanted to get better. So his lack of intelligence, or, you know, call it what you will, wasn't as big of a detriment. I think if you get these people who genuinely join because they want to better themselves, you'll still, although, you know, they have a score of whatever on the test, I think you could still get a lot of production out of them.
Unless we forget, there was once a pretty dumb fella that went to the University of Alabama, became an officer, ended up with a Purple Heart and got a Medal of Honor out of it, and went to the White House a bunch of times and about
bankrupt. Ton of Dr. Pepper.
He's a ton of
Dr. Pepper.
I must have drank me about 14 Dr. Peppers.
Yeah, Forrest Gump.
And that's what he was doing, drinking them up. If Forrest can do it, you can do
Gump.
It.
Gump, why did you put that rifle together so quickly?
Dude, if I was a staff sergeant still and I had a bunch of people like Gump that I was like, put together your weapons, and they're just like, do, done. I would be like, fuck yeah, man. If that's what we're going to get from these ASVAB waivers, sign them up.
Okay, so I was in an MOS that tended to have higher whatever. Buddy, we stayed fucking up 24/7. It doesn't matter, dude. We found just more intense ways to fuck up, it feels like.
Right. The other side of it is, you know, the smarter people think they're smart, so they try to find ways around the rules, whereas the dummies, the dummies will just follow the rules because they don't have any other ideas in their head.
And to Kate's point, we were both had the same MOS. I had brand new joints thinking that they had to fill up the fucking water fountain.
We had to make sure a guy showered.
Water and empty them in. I'm like, the water fountain's almost fucking filled. Go get it. Okay.
We had to make sure a guy showered every week.
Like, that's good,
physically, someone had to sit in his room and make sure he did basic hygiene. Like, it doesn't,
I had Troops Sergeant Shower, who was one. I don't think I've said that name in a long time. Sergeant Showers. He was the sergeant that I would go to and be like, hey, that PFC fucking stinks. That Lance Corporal's uniform is fucked up. Go to the barracks and fix it. He'd be like, who needs a fucking shower? Winter, I know you do. Come here, Winter. You need a fucking shower. That's the way it goes. All right, let's move on to round number two. We're going to talk about Zach and Tom Schumann. We've talked about this story. We've had them on before. They were in studio with us. It got a little emotional. I fucking cried. I'm the Steph Curry of crying on podcasts. I think I probably have more episodes crying than anyone else at Barstool, would you say?
Yeah.
Pretty close.
I would say.
Yeah, that's pretty true. So Zach's story got a little bit, I'd say, worse this week because happened with him is, so what is happening is unjust. Hopefully we can stop it with a wide-scale effort from social media and veterans across the scope. But I want to walk you through, just a reminder, Kate, what happened here.
Yeah, so quick backstory on them in case, I mean, they're everywhere, but in case you didn't know it, during the fall of Kabul to the Taliban, the bond between two men from opposite worlds proved to be unshakable and led to the rescue of a desperate family. They are now sharing their experience in the memoir Always Faithful, which we had them on to talk about. But basically, after several failed attempts, everyone knows the scene at the gates at the airport, just tens of thousands of desperate Afghans trying to get their families out, people passing babies over the fence. And Zach is there with his family, his wife and his four kids, one who was just a baby at the time, like a little toddler, barely. And so he had worked with Major Tom Schuman and the U.S. military in general for several years in Afghanistan. And it became this huge social media campaign. I know we were all desperately trying to help out and get this guy out. And
if you remember, hashtag Digital Dunkirk was what was
Digital Dunkirk. And I mean, we were on, what is it, Signal app. And I was messaging journalists and congresspeople. Right. And can anybody help this guy? Like, hundreds of us were doing that for this family, trying to get them out. And Tom Schuman and this group was able to get him out. And I remember, like, it was felt so intense to all of us when it happened. Like, I had cried tears of relief when I saw the photo of them getting the fuck out of there. It was like at least one small good thing in this sea of like horror. So,
and it also showed how close, like the, you know, the 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon or whatever, when that picture of Zach finally getting inside the gate and was going to leave, behind him and his family was a Saturdays for the Boys flag, like that was there. And it's like that shows how not far away you are from these people. It's like 1 degree of separation from somebody that is going through a horrific time and worried about their family's lives legitimately every second of the day.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches, but there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Yeah, so Schuman left Afghanistan in 2013, Zach remained, and as the Taliban took over, Schuman thought about Zach and was like, hey, how can we help get you out of here? And Zach pretty much became family with him at that point. So Schuman had hoped that his story, and because this story, everyone was rooting for Zach and his family to get out, and it kind of became this poster for Americans who might not fully understand, to understand the bond that so many of us, and the agony a lot of us were feeling was moral injury at our own interpreters being stuck there. All these Afghans, not even just interpreters, who put their lives on the line literally to help us because we promised them, the U.S. government promised them, that in return for your help, you will be able to come to the United States and we will keep you safe from the Taliban. And then as soon as it was wheels up, we were like, nope, never mind, bye, see ya, fuck you. And it, for a lot of us, it was like a fucking stab in the heart. Like, we felt that very intensely.
And because that is the people that you fought beside. Whenever you're there with an interpreter and they're out on missions with you, you're not thinking of them as an interpreter. You're thinking of them as a part of the group. It doesn't matter that
our guys gave our interpreters weapons. They're not supposed to do that. And they were like,
ours gave them the fucking thumper. You know, the six revolver of 203 rounds.
Yeah,
he carried around the thumper.
Well, so I'm scrolling social media last night, and so Zach, they had kept trying to apply for his visa. He lives kind of near Chaps in San Antonio, Texas. And Tom Schuman had stayed on top of it, trying to make sure that Zach and his family got their visa and blah, blah, blah. Well, he posted this last night. There is no further appeal of this decision. Last week, Zach's visa application was denied for the final time. The reason stated that they gave is insufficient length of employment. Sufficient employment to qualify for the special immigrant visa program is 12 months. You can see from Zach's supporting documents that he exceeds that requirement. So they said he didn't meet length of employment, blah, blah, blah. The proof is there. He exceeded that. He had that. Zach is here as a parolee and faces possible deportation. Unlike those admitted to the U.S. as refugees, parolees are ineligible for refugee cash assistance or food stamps and receive limited access to case management assistance to help them adapt to life in the U.S. So basically, like, you get tossed here and there's no help for you. Zach currently works hanging drywall at a cancer hospital 6 days a week for 12 hours a day and makes minimum wage while he supports a family of six. And he included, if you look up Thomas Schuman on Facebook and everything, there's a link to a GoFundMe for Zach and everything. But it's just so infuriating. So it goes to show, like, Zach is high visibility and has had a lot of PR and publicity on him. If he can't get help, even though he is more than proven that he has helped the U.S., then everybody else, all the other Afghans that put their lives and their families on the line to help us are fucked, dude. They're completely
what I was thinking when they were promoting his book. And he was with him everywhere and telling his story. So it's
they're
it's
on Good Morning
really
America, you know, with millions of people rooting for him, and he can't get.
I don't doubt that he's been doing this work. I wonder if he's been like an undocumented person doing this work, though.
No, he said they have different documentations of where he was at. Like in Afghanistan, he has papers that are from there, like from actual Afghanistan.
No, I don't doubt that. But I'm wondering if it's like some bullshit technicality that's like, well, that's not the official documentation. It's like, oh, like somebody just signed off that this is where he's been and working. And it wasn't – it was like the wrong piece of paper. It was the wrong form. It's like, oh, you filled out DA form, you know, 123, and you're supposed to fill out DA form 124. Yeah, I'm just – I'm completely speculating.
I don't understand. They put it out there. Like they, Tom actually dropped the letter that was from the U.S. government. And I'll read it to you guys so you can hear on the show. It says it comes from – where does it come from? The Embassy of the United States in Kabul, Afghanistan. It says, you do not have the required length of employment by or on behalf of the United States government. The Afghan Allies Protection Act of 2009, as amended, requires you to be employed by on the behalf of the U.S. government for 1 year. On his documentation, it says that he worked there from January of 2012 to December of 2013, which, if my math is correct, that's 23 months, which is 23 little alligator backwards 12. It's greater than 12.
So Jack McCain, the son of John McCain, we all know, he wrote an op-ed for the Chicago Tribune. There's been people camping outside Capitol Hill for the Afghan Adjustment Act, which is really the only hope at this point. And he writes that those who made it to safety, because even then, so many tens of thousands were left behind without even a chance by us who promised them. Those who made it to safety are languishing in uncertainty. Afghan Air Force combat pilots, who the U.S. paid millions of dollars to train, make ends meet driving for Uber and doing other precarious jobs that they're massively overqualified and overeducated for, all because they don't have a pathway to permanent status in the U.S. that would allow them to return to the skies. It's too late to fix the dysfunction our withdrawal unleashed in Afghanistan, but there's still time to make it right. The Afghan Adjustment Act protects those who work directly for U.S. military as interpreters or liaisons. Additionally, all Afghans seeking status will be subject to the gold standard of security vetting, the same vetting that we use to resettle refugees in the U.S. required to pass. So this would be for anybody who says, well, if we do this, they're just going to let people from Afghanistan over, blah, blah, blah. No, they're going to give them the same very thorough vetting process, but at least they'll have a fucking pathway. The bill will help ensure that no one is left behind by establishing an office outside Afghanistan where those who remain there or are stuck in other third world countries can go to get their cases processed and give them a chance to restart their lives with dignity. So basically, if you, I know we always say it, but like, if you can bug your congresspeople, your representatives, your Afghan Adjustment Act, to push them to pass the Afghan Adjustment Act, share these stories, talk about it, get mad about it. But it really actually matters. It really makes a difference. And this is
like,
up
this is,
for...
And it's it real like here in San Antonio, I don't know if you guys have... it's very culturally diverse in New York, obviously. But here in San Antonio, you primarily have like people that are Hispanic or you have white people. And that's essentially the makeup. Like 90% of San Antonio is those two groups. Now that you have so many Afghans here, like you go to different parts of the town where so many pockets are, and it is almost refreshing to see a different culture and see how they treat their kids and how like walking around and just how they're doing things and how they are assimilating to this culture and things that they like here. I don't know how we do this to people. I really don't.
But
like as people with human feelings, how do you do this to people and say, now you got to send them back to fucking Afghanistan? Are you shitting me?
Yeah, it's down to the final few weeks of the 117th Congress, and this is, like, our best chance to keep this promise. It's down to the wire. It's time to pass the Afghan Adjustment Act.
It should be bipartisan.
Should be completely
bipartisan.
It's falling to, ultimately, Republican Senators John Corwin, Jerry Moran, Tom Tillis, Pat Toomey, Roger Wicker, Dan Sullivan, Marco Rubio, and Mike Rounds to ensure we keep our word. Hit them up. Say, please, Afghan Adjustment Act. This is really important. This really matters. But anyway.
This is part of the problem, though, with these government agencies. And I actually dealt with this with the VA. There was one form I was missing. Everything else was good. But I was missing one form. So, like, all right, denied. You got to do it all over again. and whatever, I'll do it all over again. But maybe it is a similar situation where it's like, oh, you're missing this. Because clearly he did everything he was supposed to do, so maybe something was missing. Why don't you just give him a heads up and say, hey, listen, you're missing this one form, or you got to fill this out a different way. And then let it get through and get passed and get him.
Well, that's the problem. Both the Trump and Biden administration failed miserably in preparing for this. They both knew it was coming, but they put it on the back burner because, quite frankly, to the people at the top, these Afghan people just don't fucking matter.
Do we really believe that these people were given Xerox copies of their fucking HR employment records? Like, that shit's insane. Like,
Leatherneck was a no-man's land. Like, some of those people from third world countries, we would be hearing... We're like, you know how they talked about how people from third world countries were like basically trapped in Qatar as slaves?
Right, yeah.
That shit was happening on U.S.
from Uganda,
military bases.
Like the people from Uganda was going through that.
There's no way they could prove probably that they were even ever in Afghanistan working for U.S. in some cases. So it was such a mess from the beginning, and it was never taken seriously and taken care of, because I think it was just like, this will blow over eventually or something.
We'll make that promise, we'll make that promise. Like, and in your head, the people who are making the promises, like, well, that's not going to be my problem, so I'm not really worried about it. I look like the good person because I'm making the promise that we're going to help you. And then when push comes to shove, they're like, everything's screwed up now. And now we have situations like this.
Ultimately, there needs to be somebody to step up, and I think that that's going to have to be the veteran community, just like we did in the PAC deck. It's going to...
John Stewart's like, I'm fucking exhausted.
I can't do it anymore. All those celebrity chefs are like, fellas, ladies, can we just... You want to Uber Eats? We'll pay for it. Get all the employees at Barstool to give their $80 a month at Uber Eats, and we'll figure this shit out. Hit up your congressman. That's all we need to say there. All right, let's move on to some save rounds and alibis.
Barstool Sports and Foreplay have partnered up with Skillz, the leading sports skill training brand, to develop co-branded golf training aids that will help you improve your game. The Skillz Barstool Golf line was designed to help sharpen every aspect of your game from tee to green. The products help you develop your swing, whether it's gaining distance, improving accuracy, chipping around the greens, or dialing in your putting. All products are made by golfers for golfers. They were developed by industry experts who understand the game. Skillz Barstool Golf products are now available at golfgalaxy.com/barstool or in store at Golf Galaxy and select Dick's Sporting Goods House of Sport locations.
Let's do some save rounds and alibis. Nicholas, we'll start with you.
For me, you know the deal. Just want you to make sure you guys go on over to YouTube. Please hit subscribe. Thank you.
Cons.
Big weekend. Favorite weekend of the year.
If you guys win, it's your favorite weekend of the year, right? Otherwise, it's your least favorite.
No, because the stuff leading up to it and being around all my buddies and people I don't get to normally see, that part is good regardless of how the game turns out. So I think it always is my favorite weekend of the year. Certainly, we want to get the win, and we'll see how that goes. I'm confident in our team's ability this year to get the W. So we'll see how that goes.
I kind of want Army to win this year just because I don't want to see you walking around like Sad Sack Linus from
Charlie's with your
blanket.
I just for Alex's sake.
Yeah, just for now that you're actually married for the game, we gotta help Alex out. We needed the win for Army.
Okay, all right, I like that.
But
not because of you,
maybe.
It's because we like Alex.
Anything else, Cons?
Yes. So at the college football show, where we'll be in Lot N for the game on Saturday, we'll have a gentleman with us, an Army veteran named David, as part of the Dream Foundation. And the Dream Foundation, their mission is to serve terminally ill adults and their families by providing end-of-life dreams that offer inspiration, comfort, and closure. So we're happy to be partnering with the Dream Foundation to have David as our guest, and he'll get mentioned during the show. So I just want to make mention of that, and you know, it's a great organization, so I'm glad that we're going to be hosting him, and I'm very much looking forward to the weekend.
Yeah.
Catherine?
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of, if you want to come meet him, meet us, hang out, just have a beer with us and chill, a little glass of Whistle Pig, we will be at Barstool Sansom Street with a bunch of other Barstool people. Rough and Rowdy, the fight club that we run, that will be having a live pay-per-view event that will be playing at the bar. A bunch of us will be there. I know Cons has a bunch of his Army alumni buddies going to be there. I'm going to be boozing with my cousins a little bit.
We're going to get Katie Lucy Goosey. That's my prediction.
Okay, you got to put down your pocketbook?
I'm going to put down a pocketbook of dance.
Oh, I love that.
So that's Friday night from 8 to 10 at Barstool Sansom. It's right in Center City. It's super easy to get to. And then we have a huge footprint for the game and for college football
Lot
show
N.
on Saturday. Lot N as in nice.
That's right. That exactly. What's the N night. Phonetic alphabet?
Catherine?
Nike?
Yes.
Close.
Nike. Yeah, that's
yes.
it. Nike.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it.
What is it?
November.
I have no idea.
November.
Ah. Classic.
Yeah, it is classic.
Stolen ballot.
I don't really have anything either. We'll see you back. I'll be in New York next week. I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
Not really next week. I just guess for just the game, and then I go home like 2 days later.
Yeah.
But I'll see you guys then, and we'll see you next week. It's on the retreat.